Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
The 0-2 is swung on, drilled in the air toward right field. Castellanos on the move, still going back to the track, to the wall, and it is gone. It is out of here, a two-run shot the other way for Christian Vasquez.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Tigers.
Xander swings, ground ball, fair ball, down the line at third, this will get a run in. Here comes Hernandez to score. They're going to try and score two. Betts rounding third, coming home. He is in. It's a double, two RBIs for Xander Bogaerts.
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
All right, what do you make of where your Boston Red Sox are at right now at the All-Star break? The number is 617-779-7937. They are 9 games back of the New York Yankees. And the thing that sticks out to me the most about this team is it feels like you're wasting an all-time great offense. You are first in Major League Baseball in a couple of different categories, average on-base percentage. You're better than the Yankees as it pertains to OPS as well. The Yankees have you in slugging percentage and in home runs. But the Red Sox lead the Yankees in more statistical categories, and also factor in that they've scored more runs than the Yankees this season. So the offense is on par or better than the Yankees in most statistical categories this season. Yet you sit 9 games back of the Yankees in the division. And the thing that irritates you as a Red Sox fan, the thing that aggravates you as somebody that watches this game every night, is that you feel like you're wasting this season. You feel like your offense is being wasted right now. That's why I've compared this team to the 2012 Patriots, where the 2012 Patriots led the NFL in scoring. Total offense, they led the league, but their defense sucked. They were 25th in the NFL in total defense that year. And what happened in the postseason? You lost 28-13 to the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC Championship game. This Red Sox team, it seems like the whole of the team, where you're looking at in terms of team ERA, they're 7th in the American League, middle of the road. They're 18th in all of Major League Baseball. That is a middle of the road pitching staff, okay? That's where the Red Sox are at right now. Their pitching staff is middle of the road, and it feels like you're not going to be able to upgrade your staff enough and your bullpen enough to be able to be a good enough team to actually compete for a World Series. So you look at this team right now, the lineup is actually in a lot of ways better than it was a season ago. And I get that some of the statistical numbers aren't there, but some of the guys are having much better seasons than they did last year. The only guys that aren't having like equal seasons to what they had last year, Mookie, but he was never going to be as good as he was last year again. Now, he'll get better. He'll get hotter in the second half, and we've seen over the past couple of days, Mookie's starting to heat up. JD Martinez is still the same player. Now, I get maybe some of the numbers aren't on par, but he's still pretty much the same player. But you look at some of the other guys, Vasquez much better. Dever is obviously an MVP candidate. Bogaerts an MVP candidate. So those guys are actually having better seasons than they were a year ago. And it feels like when I watch this team, it's tough for me to completely buy into them. And it's aggravating to watch because you just feel like this team does not have a legitimate shot because they have a bullpen that sucks and they have a starting rotation that hasn't lived up to the hype whatsoever. And when you look at the starting rotation, you look at Porcello, who's been a mess, career worst, 5.33 ERA. He was horrible last night against the Tigers, could not get out of the sixth inning of that game. And Chris Sale was horrible the other night against the Blue Jays, and that's 3 consecutive starts where bad teams have lit up Chris Sale. The Blue Jays twice, and the Chicago White Sox have done it again. And then when you look at the bullpen, there have been no external guys brought in here to help fix it. And now we're almost at the trading deadline. The time that you should have made a move, well, first of all, you should have addressed this in the offseason, which you never did if you were Dave Dombrowski. But at this particular point in time, you haven't made a move at all. And you were falling behind the Yankees in the division by 7 games, by 8 games. Now it's at 9, but you were down, what, 11 games in the division. And you never made a move then. That's what aggravated me, is you never fixed it. And you also were in a position where the guy, Nathan Eovaldi, that you gave $17 million to, he's been injured. Okay? And you never got somebody that could be a competent enough fifth starter to take his place. You trotted out all these guys. The Hector Velasquez's of the world. The Ryan Weber's of the world. The Josh Smith's of the world. You never figured out a way to get that fifth spot in the rotation with Eovaldi going down. And then you overtaxed all these bullpen guys. So it was two problems in one with Nathan Eovaldi going down. You couldn't find somebody to start every fifth day. And you also didn't have enough arms in the bullpen to be able to take on those innings. To the point where Matt Barnes right now, he looks done. He looks shot at this point in the season. The guy can't pitch on back-to-back days because all season long, you've relied on him to go against every team's 2-3-4 hitter when they come up late in games. And Matt Barnes right now has an ERA on back-to-back days over 11. Okay, and Matt Barnes is allergic to the ninth inning. 4 out of 10 save opportunities he's converted. So he's mixed 6 of them. Okay, this bullpen in totality has blown 18 saves, which is the worst in the American League. So I watch this team on a nightly basis, and I think to myself, what am I doing this for? Why am I getting suckered into this team? I enjoy watching Devers. I enjoy watching Bogarts. But every time you come out to the late innings of games, you're in trouble. Even today, did you feel confident the Red Sox were getting out of that eighth inning? With Ryan Brazier on the mound, they had to yank him for Workman. They brought Brazier out into a 6-1 game against a Detroit Tigers team that is worst in Major League Baseball on average, that is worst in Major League Baseball as it pertains to on-base percentage, and they've hit the second fewest home runs in the entire MLB. The American League, they're the worst in that category. The only team that's hit fewer home runs is the Miami Marlins. Okay, the Twins have hit like 100 more home runs than have the Detroit Tigers, and Brazier can't even get out of that inning. That's somebody that this organization thought was going to pitch in high leverage situations this season. Remember, it was all about Barnes and Brazier coming into the season because Brazier had this nice run last year. Well, I'm sorry, he's not the guy that he was last year during the postseason. Now, one thing I do want to get to from a positive perspective, and it's kind of like Alex Cora just kind of stumbled upon this, and sometimes that happens in sports, right? You get a little lucky, which turns things around for you. But one area that he really got lucky in is for so long this year, he screwed up the top of the order, right? Where he didn't have Mookie at leadoff and he had Benintendi hitting second. And Benintendi was they had Benintendi hitting first instead of hitting second and Mookie hitting second instead of hitting first. You get the point. Nonetheless, I digress to get back to the original point. Benintendi was 3 of 37 in the leadoff spot. And it took Alex Cora till the 57th game of the season to remove him out of that location in the lineup, which made no sense to take that long to make the adjustment. And it was because he was being stubborn, because at the beginning of the season, not even at the beginning of the season, at the winter meetings, he came out and made the announcement they were switching this thing up. It's like, oh, hold on, Alex. You guys just had the best offense in baseball. Mookie was the American League MVP. He was literally the best player in baseball last season. And you're switching up his location in the order? What the hell are you doing? So it took that long to make the adjustment. But now since Benintendi has still been scuffling until the past couple of days, he had 4 hits yesterday. One was a gift, but you'll take it at this point in the season if you're Benintendi. Another hit today. Another 2 hits today, actually. So maybe this is when Benintendi gets going. And it was good to get him back into the lineup against the Tigers, who are essentially throwing batting practice. Zimmerman, you had 13 hits off him after 3 1/3 yesterday, and today you have a bullpen game for the Tigers who suck. So Benintendi got batting practice. Maybe this gets his confidence up and it gets it going. But nonetheless, you have to drop Benintendi in the order because even when you put him back in the two-hole, he wasn't producing. So that meant that you put Rafael Devers in the two-hole, who right now is second in the American League in hitting. And think about these numbers since you've moved Rafael Devers to the two-hole. The Red Sox have scored in 9 of 11 games in the first inning. This is what the Red Sox were so good at last year, is they jumped on opponents early on in games. And ever since you moved Rafael Devers into the two-hole, this team has scored in 9 of its 11 games. It's phenomenal. You think about it. Game 1 against the White Sox, RBI double for Devers. Game 2 against the White Sox, Devers gets on board, JD a home run. Game 3 was against the Yankees, the 6-run first inning, Devers an RBI double in that one. Game 4 against the Yankees, Devers gets on base, Bogarts a 2-run home run. Game 5 against the Blue Jays, Devers a 2-run home run. Game 6, they didn't score in the first inning against the Jays. Game 7 against the Jays, Devers a home run in the first inning. Game 8 against the Jays on Thursday, since Devers moved to the two-hole, a home run in the first inning. Game 9 was on Friday night. Now, he doesn't get an RBI or score a run, but he grounds out, and that moves Mookie over, and then Bogarts drives Mookie in. Saturday, Mookie triples. Devers drives him in. And then game 11 today, Sunday, since Devers moved to that two-hole that didn't score. But only two times they haven't scored. And Devers has factored into the equation like every time. And this is the perfect spot for Devers in the in the order, if you will, because you have Mookie hitting in front of him, who's going to get more fastballs because Devers behind him. Now teams are fearing Devers. And Devers has Bogarts and JD Martinez behind him. Two of the best run producers in Major League Baseball right now. So this lineup is just absolutely devastating right now. Devers in the two-hole was like the perfect move because now you can go righty with Mookie, lefty to Devers, righty to Bogarts, and then, of course, you got another righty after that with JD Martinez. But having that lefty in between Mookie and in between Xander Bogarts is just perfect. And again, I come back to the same thing with the Red Sox. What is it all for? Because it just feels like, yeah, this lineup may go out and score you eight runs, but you never feel safe. You had a game the other day where your team comes back and Bogarts has a typical Bogarts moment, another clutch moment, and he takes the lead 7-6 over the White Sox. Remember about a week and a half ago on that two-run single, and then Matt Barnes gives it up. You built up, what, a 6-1 lead against the Blue Jays a couple of weeks ago, and the bullpen gives it back. So you just never know what's going to be enough in terms of the run production with this Red Sox offense because you can't trust the rotation right now, and we all know you can't trust the bullpen. 617-779-7937 is your number. Let's get to Rob in Hampton. What's up, Rob?
Hey, Michael. How you doing, bud? I'm sorry, Brian. How you doing?
Good. What do you got, man?
Hey, so you've made a lot of great points, but I want to talk about Cora a little bit. I think he was way too arrogant at the beginning of the season. We were not ready to play baseball, and I think that put a lot of pressure on the bullpen, and it's part of the reason why they're kind of struggling right now. I think he just really misplayed the whole beginning of the season.
I would agree with you, Rob, and I think another thing that's interesting is remember at the beginning of the season he said that he didn't want to turn the page, and then like literally 2 days ago he said, I think we're doing a good job turning the page. That was like his strategy. Oh, we don't want to turn over the page. We just want to continue what we did last year. And another thing that irritated me is he said at the baseball writers meeting at the beginning of the season that if you thought we were good last year, we haven't seen anything yet. And I agree with you. It was an arrogant approach to the season by the front office and maybe from the manager as well. Maybe there was a sense of arrogance with what they did last year because they pulled out all the moves. Right, Rob? They pulled out all these moves or they were smarter than everybody else. Nobody thought they could win with the lack of bullpen depth, if you will, and they were able to do it. And it feels like they puffed out their chest this offseason and they treated it like they could bring back the bulk of the same team and they would be fine. And I also look at it like, Rob, why would you switch up the batting order if it was so successful last year? Wasn't that kind of like a raising my hand, oh, look at me, to kind of like make it about you in that particular scenario?
I couldn't agree more. So, like, way too arrogant. Why in the world would you have a guy that's an MVP, one of the greatest offenses probably in the history of the Red Sox, and you go, hey, you know what we'll do? It's a good idea. Let's change it.
Yeah, it was literally the best team in the history of the Red Sox. So maybe part of that is it's like a victory lap for both the front office and the manager to begin the season. You know, Robin, one of the things that really irritates me now is it took Dave Dombrowski, and it still has taken Dave Dombrowski to this point to add a bullpen arm. He hasn't done it. He hasn't done it whatsoever. All we hear is we're going to get these guys back internally, is what he says. So Stephen Wright, okay, gives up the home run to Gardner. Yesterday, you have to get Heath Embry warming up the bullpen because he walks a guy and he gives up a hit. You're not sure he can get out of that situation against the Tigers. I think back to the Blue Jays the other night. A walk gives up a run in that particular scenario. So he was supposed to be somebody you could depend on. Hector Velasquez, somebody that you're supposed to be able to depend on, according to Dave Dombrowski. But as his team continued to fall behind the Yankees, where was the guy running this organization? Why didn't he get a reliever then? And then I'm hearing from Alex Cora that they're going to have to prove they're consistent for them to go out and get a reliever. And the issue is, the reason this team isn't consistent is because your bullpen can't get outs. That's why it doesn't have anything to do with your offense. Your pitching staff and your bullpen is letting down your offense. And part of the reason it's letting it down, because they don't have the talent of the bullpen and the front office hasn't done anything about it.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. How about this? So we have probably the last 6 weeks, one of the worst bullpens of baseball. So now we're going to pay a guy $17 million to be our closer? That doesn't make any sense.
But you know, it's
$17 million to be the closer?
Yeah. You know what's great about that, Rob, and I appreciate the call. You can grab his line if you'd like to. It's 617-779-7937. Remember, that was part of the reason that they didn't want to bring Kimbrel back, right? They didn't want to shell out $16 to $17 million for a closer. And now Nathan Eovaldi is essentially, by default, going to become the closer of this team. That's what's going to happen. You didn't want to give $17 million to a Craig Kimbrel out there, but now Nathan Eovaldi is essentially going to become a $17 million closer, at least for the foreseeable future. Because they say, well, now that he's coming back as a reliever, it's about a month earlier than he could have come back as a starting pitcher. And from my perspective, what this is, and I will not give Dave Dombrowski credit for this, but what I think it is, what it seems like to me, is Dave Dombrowski realizes, oh, crap, I got to get something out of this guy. I just told ownership that this is who I wanted. This is who we identified as one of the World Series heroes, one of the playoff heroes last year. We got to get something out of this contract this year. And as they continue to try to bring him back, remember what happened. Now, again, let me remind you, this is the same elbow procedure he had last year. And he's had two Tommy John surgeries prior to this, one in high school, one as a major league player. So this is the guy that they identified as the guy they wanted to give a long-term contract out to, a guy with multiple elbow procedures. But as he tried to make his way back, they were saying, oh, it's a six-week thing, rather. Now, they got that completely wrong. They said 6 weeks. And then what happened to him? Oh, he developed biceps tendonitis as he was trying to get back. And now all of a sudden we're hearing after, for a prolonged period of time, yeah, we're going to bring Nate back as a starter. Now all of a sudden we're hearing, well, it's just going to be too long to get him back as a starter. So now we have to put him into the bullpen. So what I think Dave Dombrowski wants is this is going to be, if he works out, Dave Dombrowski can say, see, part of the reason that we gave Nate the contract. Now, we want him to be a starter long term. But part of the reason we gave him this contract is we knew that we could bring him out of the bullpen as well. Like, he's going to try to spin this in a way that makes the organization look good for signing Nathan Eovaldi to that long-term deal. If Nathan Eovaldi comes back and he answers all the questions and he actually is a legitimate bullpen arm. Because I don't know about you, but I still have questions about this. I feel like the question that everybody's asking is, oh, is it a good idea to bring him back as a bullpen guy or as a starter? Or is it a better idea to bring him back as a bullpen guy as a starter? I feel like that's the question that everybody's asking. But nobody's asking the question of, well, do we even know if he's going to be good out of the bullpen? Because he had a couple of nice outings out of the bullpen against the Astros where he threw 102 miles an hour to Alex Bregman. And because of that game that he came out of the bullpen against the Dodgers and pitched like seven innings. And by the way, he lost that game. And everybody worshipped him in this town because, oh, such a gutty, gritty performance, right? Everybody was so unbelievably impressed with Nathan Eovaldi. And because he had that 161 ERA in the postseason last year, that's why everybody just assumes that he can go into the bullpen and perform at a high level. Well, I look at bullpen guys, and I look at strikeouts per nine innings. You got to be a high-volume strikeout guy for me to depend on you coming out of the bullpen. And when I look at Nathan Eovaldi, he's never been that guy in his career. Even last year, in his great postseason run, 6.4 strikeouts per nine innings. That's not great for a reliever. That's not great for a starting pitcher. So despite the fact that this guy has always had 100 miles an hour, 102 miles an hour at his disposal, he's never been a consistent pitcher. That's the reason that he didn't have a big market this offseason when he went into free agency. There wasn't a lot of teams after Nathan Eovaldi because you want to know the reality of it all? Nathan Eovaldi as a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball over a bunch of years, a 4.21 career ERA. The Marlins gave up on him. The Dodgers gave up on him. The Yankees gave up on him. The Rays said all it's going to take from the Red Sox is Jalen Beeks for us to send you a guy in the division. So the Rays are an organization that gave up on him. So yeah, you got a nice month out of him. And you don't win a World Series with Nathan Eovaldi without Nathan Eovaldi last year, I should say. And I'm not trying to take anything away from his performance in the postseason last year. But to just look at 1 month of a guy's career and think that's the guy you're going to get when he comes back, I just don't know how everybody is just assuming that Nathan Eovaldi is going to be good coming out of the bullpen because I'm certainly not making that assumption. I could see him falling flat on his face and not performing whatsoever because now think about it from a pressure aspect. Now all the pressure's on Nathan Eovaldi, right? There is so much pressure on Nathan Eovaldi because the way the organization has handled this, where they came out and they said, yeah, Nathan's going back into the bullpen. We think he's going to be a huge lift. And I'm paraphrasing what Dave Dombrowski and Alex Cora are saying. But that is essentially what they were telling us, is that we're going to get a huge lift from bringing Nathan Eovaldi into the bullpen. So what if Nathan Eovaldi fails? What if Nathan Eovaldi doesn't perform well? Then what is your solution? Because it seems like all year, Dave Dombrowski has been asleep at the wheel, waiting for Nathan Eovaldi and these other relievers to come back. And I call him a reliever now because that's essentially what he's going to be. And ever since he's been saying these guys, pointing out Velasquez coming back and Steven Wright coming back, none of those guys have performed at a high level. None of them have performed at a high level. So now this is like your last-ditch effort to get some value out of a $17 million contract this season. This is your last-ditch effort by putting him into the bullpen, this better work out for Dave Dombrowski, because the two big contracts now, Chris Sale, actually, you look at it, the three big contracts he's given out this offseason, I guess you factor in four because Bogarts, but that happened at the start of the season. And quite frankly, you can't give him too much credit for that one because Bogarts went to him and said, I wanted an extension, right? I want to be here long term. And they signed him up. Steve Pierce, $6 million per season, zero. Nathan Eovaldi, $17 million per season, negative because it's killed your bullpen and it's killed your fifth starter spot in the rotation. With Dave Dombrowski, didn't address either one of them. Didn't address either hole that Nathan Eovaldi left behind. And then finally, last but not least, Chris Sale, the $145 million man that is supposed to be the ace of the staff for the long term, he hasn't performed. So look at all those contracts he handed out this offseason. Absolutely atrocious. All right, a lot more to get into. We'll get into some Celtics as well. So Kawhi Leonard, now a member of the Los Angeles Clippers. What does it all mean for the Boston Celtics going forward? Also this, Doc Rivers is now coaching Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. What would have happened if Doc Rivers never left Boston? Would the Celtics be in the position they're in right now? Your number is 617-779-7937. We'll get you trending in just a second here.
Some of the guys out there have actually thrown great.
93.7 FM, WEEI.
I don't believe Kawhi Leonard was going to go to the Clippers without a second star coming in. I think essentially Kawhi Leonard's position in these last couple days to all the teams was, I'm maybe going to go to the best team and the team that loads up. And the Clippers were the team that had to make a move to bring in a second star. There is more talent in with the Lakers, with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Obviously, the team he left in Toronto. The Clippers had been Kawhi Leonard's focus for this entire process, but they needed to improve themselves. They go out and get Paul George, and now you have these two elite bookend forwards to play together, but they paid a steep price. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, with their first round pick last year, had an outstanding rookie season. Patrick Beverley will be their point guard now.
All right, well, at least it helps the Celtics a little bit, right? Kawhi Leonard out of the Eastern Conference. Go to the West. Best player in the East just left. He went to the West. It helps the Celtics a little bit. 617-779-7937 is your number. Brian Barrett with you for the next half hour or so here on WEI. Okay, so, man, I got to tell you, this is one of the craziest things I've ever seen in the NBA in terms of what Kawhi Leonard did. And as somebody that roots for the Celtics, you should love what Kawhi Leonard did. For a couple of reasons. Okay, let's get to the first one. So Kawhi Leonard had all the power in the NBA world. Kevin Durant had signed. LeBron James is already under contract. He was the best player on the market. And right now he's better than Durant because Durant's hurt and he has an Achilles tendon that's torn. Nobody comes back from that injury with the exception of like Dominique Wilkins. And by saying nobody comes back from it, I mean nobody comes back as the same player. Now, Durant may benefit more because he's like 7 feet tall and he could be like Dirk when he comes back. But is Durant ever going to be the same athlete again on the other side of 30? I highly, highly doubt that. But anyway, getting back to Kawhi Leonard, he had all the power in the NBA and he could have really screwed us all over. As people that enjoy watching the NBA, he could have screwed it for everybody, right? Because if he goes to the Lakers, think about this. They have Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Kawhi Leonard. So for next season, they have the two best players in the world, LeBron and Kawhi Leonard, two proven guys in the league, a 2-time final MVP and a 3-time finals MVP. And you get this other guy, Anthony Davis, who's somewhere between like the 4th and the 7th or 8th best player in the NBA, somewhere in that range. So the league would have been done. It would have been over. Nobody would have had a chance to beat this Lakers team. It would have been the same situation that we've been dealing with for the past couple of years in terms of the Warriors. The only way the Warriors lost a series was how? Kevin Durant got hurt. That's the only way they lose to the Raptors, right? So it would have been the same situation with the Lakers. So I'm glad from just a broader point with Kawhi Leonard that the NBA is going to have an interesting season next year. Because, yeah, the Clippers and the Lakers right now are the Vegas favorites to win. Philadelphia thinks they have a chance to win. Milwaukee with a team that had the most wins in the East last year, the MVP of the league, they think they can win. Denver thinks they have an opportunity after having the second most amount of wins in the Western Conference last year. Utah made a bunch of moves. They think they're a team that can compete now that you put Mike Conley with Donovan Mitchell. So somebody else on that team can make a play. What a concept that Utah came up with. Houston now with James Harden and Chris Paul. I get they don't like each other at this particular point in time, but that's still a team that's been knocking on the door for the past couple of years. They're going to think they have an opportunity. So the point being, you have all these teams that think they have a legitimate chance at winning an NBA championship. You've now created a parity, or you've now created parity in the league that has been, the past couple of years, made completely out of super teams. I mean, really, this decade has been all about the super teams. You went from the Heat to the Warriors, and a couple of other teams got mixed in there. And you look at the Raptors, they don't win a championship if it's not for injuries. Dallas got in there, and they got the Heat at the perfect time when they were vulnerable. And you had a couple of those Spurs teams that made runs, the one with Kawhi Leonard originally, where he was just coming up, and you had Duncan and Parker and Manu Ginobili, and you really took advantage of an aging Heat team. But this has been the decade of the super team, if you will. And now, at least for a year, we're going to have a wide-open NBA. So that's one thing that I really appreciate in terms of Kawhi Leonard's decision. I would have lost a lot of respect, not that he cares what I think, but it would have been a weak move by Kawhi Leonard, because we have to be consistent. If he went to the Lakers, that would have been so weak. Like Durant going to the Warriors, weak move. LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all teaming up to make it unfair in the NBA, weak moves. This would have been the same thing with Kawhi, and he didn't want to do that. And one of the things that also makes you excited as a Celtics fan about this is the way it all went down. Okay, think about this. He left LeBron James at the altar. Kawhi Leonard left LeBron James at the altar. And here's the best part. He used LeBron James and the Lakers as leverage to get what he wanted. Because all these years, we think about Kawhi Leonard, and we think, oh, he's not like any other superstar in the NBA, right? All these other NBA superstars are about their brand, and now Kawhi's finally being out about his brand now. The New Balance brand, Boardman gets paid. Finally, he's starting to get more of a brand, if you will. But his brand is all based on his success, right? It's not like he's reaching out to get more opportunities. It's all based on his success, and they've built a brand around his personality, right? But this is what Kawhi Leonard did. He used LeBron James and the Lakers as leverage, because what was he doing? He had a meeting with the Los Angeles Lakers, okay? He talked to LeBron James. He talked to Rob Pelinka. He talked to Jeannie Buss. And oh, by the way, Magic Johnson, who said that Kawhi reached out to him, that's something that irritated Kawhi. So thank you, Magic Johnson, for helping out everybody else in the NBA. What an idiot. What a clown. Magic Johnson can't keep his mouth shut. He has to let everybody know that Kawhi reached out to him, as if to show, like, see, I still have a lot of swing with the Lakers team. I'm still part of this organization. They're reaching out to me, not reaching out to Rob Pelinka. So they still have a power struggle, even though Magic no longer is employed by the organization. And a lot of people, in terms of the Kawhi camp, it's been reported by multiple people, they were agitated with Magic when it comes to that. But anyway, as Kawhi Leonard is meeting with LeBron James and Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka, what is his team doing? The guys around Kawhi Leonard are reaching out to Paul George. And Kawhi Leonard has this secret meeting with Paul George. Or not a meeting, but he calls him up. Nobody knows this is going down. This isn't reported by any insider until late Friday night when Woj breaks the story. Nobody knows about this, which I don't know how this happens in the NBA. This never happens in the NBA. We know about everything. Okay, now we did know that Kawhi had met with Durant. And Durant, or at least he talked to him on the phone, and Durant said he wasn't interested in teaming up because he had this thing planned with Kyrie Irving. Yeah, good luck, Kevin. Choose your friends wisely. So let's just get this in there now. So Kevin Durant this offseason had an opportunity to stay with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson or team up with Kawhi Leonard. He chose option number 3, play with Kyrie Irving. Have fun, Kevin. That's all I'm going to say when it comes to that. But Kawhi originally went after Kevin Durant. And Durant said, nah, I'm sticking with Kyrie. So then he comes up with another idea. He comes up with another mastermind plan, because we think of Kawhi Leonard as the robot, right? He's just out there playing basketball. He's got the creepy laugh and all that. But he's a genius. They're calling Paul George, and Paul George isn't even a free agent. So they get on the horn with Paul George, and Kawhi says essentially, and I don't know exactly how the conversation went down, hey, Paul, I'd like to play with you. I know you're from the Southern California area, just like myself. I'd like to go to the Clippers, but I don't want to go by myself. So would you be interested in going to the Clippers with me? Or would you be interested in going to the Raptors with me? Paul George says, yeah. I'm playing with Westbrook right now, and Paul George put it on Twitter that he doesn't want anything to anybody to say negative stuff about Russell Westbrook. But the reality is he saw a better car, right? He was like, oh, well, I can get a Ferrari instead of getting an F-150. I'll take the Ferrari. Okay, so he saw a better opportunity to win at a high level. That's what happened. It is an indictment on Russell Westbrook. But nonetheless, he said, yeah, I'm interested. So then what does Kawhi Leonard do? He tells the Clippers, if you get me Paul George, I'll come play for you. If you can pull off a Paul George trade, I'll play for you. Because if not, I'm going to go to the Lakers. So now he's playing the Clippers and the Lakers against each other. He's using them as leverage. He's saying to the Clippers, hey, if you guys don't get this done, I'm not coming by myself. You guys got to go out there and you guys got to get me another player where I can compete at a championship level with. So what do the Clippers do? They give up everything, literally everything. It's the biggest trade in the history of the NBA in terms of assets given out. So the Clippers give out not one, not two, not three, not five first-round picks. Five first-round picks, four of which are unprotected. And also you factor in that they have two pick swaps. So like the next time the Clippers are actually drafting their own player, like in the spot they're supposed to be, that kid's like 10 years old right now. Yeah, like this is a bigger haul than what the Celtics got for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and it's one of the greatest fleece jobs in the history of the NBA. So Kawhi Leonard worked all this out, and I get it from the Clippers' perspective. It's like, you got to do it, because if you don't do it, then he's going to go, he told you, he'd go in your building to play for the other team in the city, the Los Angeles Lakers. And from a Clippers' perspective, you also factor this in. You also factor in, well, we're not just trading for Paul George, right? So that's why if you're running the Thunder, if you're Sam Presti, you just keep asking for stuff like, yeah, can we get a 3 first-round pick? Actually, can we make it 4? No, can we have 5 first-round picks and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Can we get all that? Yeah, well, you got to throw in something that makes the salary match. So give us Danilo Gallinari. And then actually, Gallinari had a fringy all-star season. We can actually trade him for something more. So Sam Presti must have been like, I can just keep asking for stuff, because they can't really say no, because if they say no, they don't get Kawhi Leonard and they want Kawhi Leonard. So what an unbelievable move by Kawhi Leonard to be able to pull this all off. I am so glad he went to the Clippers and not the Los Angeles Lakers, because as a Celtics fan, that would have been such a gut punch. And I actually loved seeing this happen to the Lakers, man. LeBron James and the Lakers got left at the altar. And did you see them yesterday? LeBron and Anthony Davis were at Summer League, and they were shaking Jerry West's hand, the logo, who's now a member of the Clippers organization. He's an advisor. So basically they were saying, yeah, good job. Good job. You out-recruited us. You outdid us. And how about that? Could LeBron James's legacy as a Laker being, or could it turn out to be that the Clippers are actually the better team in LA? Because right now they are. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, in my mind, a better combination than Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And LeBron James is aging. What if LeBron James goes to the Lakers? We already did. But I mean, what if he never wins a championship as a member of the Los Angeles Lakers? Lakers fans are not going to appreciate his time in LA whatsoever. Because LeBron overestimated his value to the Lakers. He goes to any other team, it's like a celebration. You go to the Lakers, you need to win. And not LeBron
four,
James...
Not three, not four, not five.
Damn right. Damn right. LeBron James does his job like with the whole Rich Paul thing, where they're running the Lakers, they get Anthony Davis, but they come in second place, or maybe even they came into third place as it pertains to the Toronto Raptors, who were also in the mix here. But unbelievable stuff by Kawhi Leonard. Now, here's one way that this really benefits the Celtics, is if another disgruntled superstar, if you will, becomes available. And we don't know who that's going to be, because Bradley Beal's not quite on that level. He's on that secondary. He's an all-star, but he's secondary. He's on the secondary level. He's not a superstar. He's not Kawhi. He's not in the Anthony Davis realm, right? He's secondary. He's on that second level. He's an all-star. If he comes available, I don't know who the other guy would be right now, because it seems like all these other guys are now in the destination they want to be in. Jimmy Butler is in Miami, and I don't even put Jimmy Butler on that level. But you think about a Kawhi signed for 4 years, Paul George is under contract, and you think about it, LeBron James, of course, he's never come to the Celtics anyway, but Anthony Davis, you get it. All the names are off the market. So I don't know who that disgruntled star would be.
Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, I would not want him. I really hope Danny Ainge doesn't even consider that. I mean, that contract is going to be an albatross going forward. Yeah, Nick, I don't want any part of Russell Westbrook. He was horrible last season. You saw him in the postseason, right? I mean, what did he shoot? 22% from three, and he keeps shooting threes. It's like, dude, you can't shoot. I want no part of that guy whatsoever. But the point being, if there is a superstar that becomes disgruntled over the next couple of years, now the Celtics, after what has transpired this summer, and you could be like, well, I wish we had Anthony Davis, or I wish we had a Paul George, whoever it may be, is now, like, when it comes to future deals, the Celtics have by far the most to offer, because if it happens over the next year or two, because now the Clippers have nothing they can offer. They have nothing to offer in a potential trade down the road. And the Lakers, another team that's always trying to wheel and deal, unless they're putting up Kuzma in a deal, they have nothing. Ingram's gone. Ball's gone. Their first-round picks are gone. So the Celtics, in terms of an asset thing, and I guess we've been hearing this for years with them, but they could be major players if there's a player out there that becomes available and is unhappy with their original team at this particular point in time. The one thing, though, now that you think about it as it pertains to the Celtics, you look at the Eastern Conference, now the Horford thing really hurts. Because we know now that Jimmy Butler was not going to be in Philadelphia, obviously. He wanted to go to Miami. Who knows what makes that guy tick? He's in Chicago. They suck. He wants out. He goes to Minnesota. They look like they're going to be good the next couple of years. He doesn't want to be there anymore. He hates Karl Anthony Towns, hates the young guys. Goes to Philly, and Philly's in a situation where he actually becomes the guy in the postseason. But maybe it's because Joel Embiid will always be the process, and he's the favorite player of all the Sixers fans. Apparently, he wanted to win, but he wanted to win on his own terms, so he goes to Miami, and he's going to be like the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. Congratulations. But nonetheless, Philadelphia wouldn't have had Jimmy Butler, and if you now had Al Horford, you're probably in the mix with the team that you have, and maybe you're one move away from making an addition to the roster. Maybe at that point you're willing to wheel and deal for Bradley Beal, because maybe you think with the East being open, you have that chance, because Milwaukee, you would argue, took a little bit of a step back by losing Malcolm Brogdon. So now the Horford thing for the Celtics, now that really hurts them based on the fact that Kawhi Leonard now resides in the Western Conference. All right, when we come back, I want to get into this. Where would the Celtics organization be if Doc Rivers never decided that he wanted to trade to Los Angeles? We'll get into that. Brian Barrett with you right here on WEI.
I'm a fun guy.
This is the WEI Sports Radio Network.
Boston Celtics plan was Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, Al Horford. That has turned into Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, Enes Kanter. That's a disaster.
That's Nick Wright on Fox Sports 1. You see the other day, Nick Wright, by the way, he apparently, like, during the season when one of the rumored guys going to the Lakers is going to be Kemba, he said that Kemba was a better player than Kyrie. And now he said that Kyrie's a better player than Kemba. He completely changed his mind just because he's biased against Boston. And also, it's more like he's pro-LeBron. He's the big LeBron guy out there, where he's a huge fan of LeBron. So, and he's also the anti-Celtics guy. But we help build up these media personalities, do we? Because Max Kellerman, who's been saying the over-the-cliff thing with Tom Brady for like the past couple of years, that's the only take I know from Max Kellerman. And these guys know in the media, they go after the Boston market, they're going to get more attention. But anyway, I wanted to get to this real quickly. So if you look at the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard situation, who they're going to be playing for, they're going to be playing for Doc Rivers, okay, with the Clippers. So I just was thinking about this the other day. When I look at it, how would this Celtics organization be different if Doc Rivers was still the coach of the team? Now, I understand. I'm not saying like this is on Danny Ainge or this is on ownership or anything along those lines. Remember, it was Doc that wanted out. And the Celtics did a pretty damn good job getting a first-round draft pick back for a coach, okay? So I'm not like criticizing the organization. Doc wanted to move on. Doc didn't want to stomach a rebuild. He wanted to go somewhere where he looked at the team and he said, okay, you have Chris Paul, you have Blake Griffin, you have DeAndre Jordan. Maybe I can make that into a championship contender. Now, that Clippers team, that version of that Clippers team, was always underachieving. They'd find a way to lose in the postseason in the most bizarre ways. But nonetheless, Doc Rivers saw an opportunity to try to win long term. And now you look at them, they have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, so he's going to coach the best player in the NBA and a top 10 player in the league. And I look at the relationship that Doc Rivers has with his former players, where Kevin Garnett's still close to them, Kendrick Perkins is still close to them, Paul Pierce is still close to them, Rajon Rondo is still close to them. We know he's alluded to the fact they got this like text chain going on where they still all communicate. So obviously, everybody loves playing with Doc Rivers, with the exception of like Chris Paul, who nobody likes Chris Paul. So I don't really put that on Doc Rivers. That's more Chris Paul. Look at James Harden, the guy that he wanted to team up with 2 years ago. He doesn't like Chris Paul. Blake Griffin doesn't like Chris Paul. DeAndre Jordan doesn't like Chris Paul. All these guys hate Chris Paul, right? He just nags on you, and he nags on you, and he nags on you. So I don't put that on Doc Rivers. But you look at where the Celtics team is at in terms of what happened with the Kyrie Irving situation. If Doc Rivers is the head coach of the team, does the Kyrie Irving situation happen the way it happens? And I say no, because I look at Brad Stevens, and the NBA now we're seeing is a players' league, right? All this player movement tells you it's a players' league. These guys aren't even free. Look at Paul George. He just signed an extension last summer, and he's already asking out, right? And when you look at Brad Stevens, he was getting all the credit for the Celtics organization over the past couple of years. Oh, look at Brad Stevens. He can do more with less and all that different type of stuff. So Brad Stevens was one of these guys that was getting a ton of credit from the national media and whatnot. And again, it's a players' league, okay? And you look at Doc Rivers, all the guys that played for Doc Rivers, with the exception of like Chris Paul, but who cares? Everybody loves playing for Doc Rivers. So if Kyrie Irving comes to the Celtics and he plays for Doc Rivers, do you think that Doc Rivers is going to allow this stuff to fester in the locker room? Because Chris Paul and Blake Griffin had issues. They had issues, okay? Those guys had issues between each other in Clipperland, but it never got out publicly. Now, there was always this underlying rumor, but it never got out there, and they still performed at a pretty high level where they're winning mid-50s to 60 games per year. So I'm going to imagine that if Doc Rivers was the coach of the Celtics, what was going on with Kyrie Irving this year would not have happened with Doc Rivers as the coach, because guys around the league respect Doc Rivers. And I'm not saying that Brad Stevens has done anything to lose the respect of guys, but when guys look at Doc Rivers, they see Doc Rivers as a former player, and they see Doc Rivers as the guy that had success with Garnett and had success with Paul Pierce and had success with Rajon Rondo, and all his former players speak highly of Doc Rivers. So I look at where this organization is. With Doc Rivers, it would be in a much better position than it is right now. As great as Doc Rivers is, as great as Brad Stevens is, as an X's and O's guys, this year he had his first opportunity to be like a legitimate NBA coach. And what I mean by a legitimate NBA coach is you need to be able to control egos. And Brad Stevens could not control egos whatsoever, to the point where guys were walking all over him in the locker room. And I still have my questions about Brad Stevens going forward, because there were a lot of guys in the locker room last year that saw Kyrie Irving just walk all over Brad Stevens. Don't you think that some of the guys in that locker room lost some level of respect for Brad Stevens, especially considering he always sided with Kyrie? When Kyrie called him out publicly for the defensive assignments, if you will, ironically, on Kemba Walker, when he called him out for not double-teaming him, and Brad essentially said, Kyrie's right, don't you think that some of the guys in the locker room lost a little bit of respect for Brad Stevens? Because all those guys, it seemed like, had an issue with Kyrie Irving throughout the year, and Brad Stevens did nothing about it. At least nothing we know. He did nothing about it whatsoever. So I just look at this thing. Man, it really sucks to see the former coach of the Boston Celtics get, not that I dislike Doc Rivers, I like Doc Rivers, I don't have any issue with him whatsoever, but the fact that Doc Rivers now has the best player in the NBA and another top 10 guy in the league, and now he's the favorite to win the NBA championship with those Los Angeles Clippers. Just tough to watch from a Celtics perspective. The summer continues to get worse for your Boston Celtics. All right, thanks to Nick for producing. I'll talk to you tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.